103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan. Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Sod Show on Dublin City FM with Brian Green and Peter Donegan. Coming up on today's programme,
the people who would generally have made putchy, the farmers and the average guy, couldn't afford to pay these taxes and licence fees. And those that could, not them, because they went around with the likes of the Jameson and Bushmills type of whiskies, became known as Parliament whiskies. And because of this reason, it went underground and then became known as the Irish Moonshine. And then what happened was, it was illegal for 330 odd years, and then it was only then in 1989 that the Irish government released the ban on distillation of poitrine, but it had to be exported. And then in 1997, they released a ban allowing it to be distributed again within Ireland.
That's Owen Carney of Glendalough Distillery. We'll be talking with Peter Donegan. It's whiskey all the way until 3:30. If you want to get in touch with us, we're on Twitter at Sod Show. We're on the Facebook, facebook.com/ The Sod Show. And we are available on email during the week, info@sodshow.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions or ideas for the programme, do get in touch. We're waiting for you. Now, we said today it's whiskey all the way till 3:30. Yes, it is. And in the form of an interview, Peter caught up with the guys from Glendalough Distillery. And this is how he got on.
It's a Friday afternoon. We are just after 3 o'clock. And in my company is?
Owen Carney from Glendalough Distillery.
Owen Carney, Glendalough Distillery. See, we're already in a happy place, people. We're already in a happy place. If you're listening to this live on radio, don't pull over the car. Just keep on going. If you're due to pick up the wife, just put the buttons down on the car doors, seal up the windows, close your eyes and listen carefully. If you're in podcast, keep walking, and I hope it's a lovely sunny day. Explain this to me like I'm a 2-year-old. The business is what?
In 2011, five friends decided that they wanted to basically bring craft distilling back to Ireland. Two of the lads worked in finance and kind of looked at the food and beverage markets, and they could kind of see a surge in Irish whiskey. And it's interesting to note that up until a few years ago, there was actually only 3 distilleries in Ireland, when there used to be over 200 and maybe a lot more unlicensed. And the idea was just to bring back sort of craft distilling and bring back a story and bring back the history.
So we've got craft beers and that's what the Sean Earlys of this world and the Anthony McGinnesses of this world would be drinking because they're hipsters. You've gone a slightly different direction and a man after my own heart in the whiskey sense of it all. I've kind of got 2 guys in finance deciding we should do, distilled whiskey. You're kind of scratching your head going, Jesus, really? He jacked in the job for 250 grand a year and the Bentley, living in, God, did you see the office where he works? And to go and did everybody not turn around and go, you guys are off your head?
Most likely, and I think the guys have said the like, but they just had this idea and they were very lucky. The way it worked was there was Brian and Barry, and they were the 2 lads that worked in finance. And Gary then, who was best friends with Barry since childhood, was actually a marketing director for a company, managing director for a marketing company. And he came on board then. And then one of his mates, Kev Keenan, who I would consider probably one of the best creative directors in the country, came on board then. And he's responsible for the look and feel of our brand, which is constantly complimented. And then Donal was cousins of Barry, and he used to work for another distillery, and he used to do the sales aspect. So the guys kind of brought in a big portfolio of skills that complemented the category, and I suppose it all just developed from there. They had an idea, and they researched it, they looked into the knowledge, they knew how to taste a good whiskey, and they set out to make it.
Okay, we're going to get around, and I know you're saying, Peter, this is a garden radio show. Yeah. I understand that. We'll get there. There's no problem at all, folks. We are on that cusp, but you got to get the background story first. So, can I ask you this? You're not a lady, so I can get away with this. And what age are you?
Myself, I'm 33.
Right. So how did you get roped into it?
I was actually very lucky. I was involved with, well, I was selected to take part in the Bord Bia Smurfit Fellowship, which is a program which recruits people from all different industries to focus them on the food and business category, so like agriculture and building food business within Ireland and exports. And I was sent to New York for a year, and I was lucky enough to have Glendalough Distillery as one of my clients.
So they essentially poached you on completion of that one-year program?
They did. When I came back to Ireland, I worked with them on a sort of part-time basis for a couple of months as we got our feet. And then in November, then I became on full-time and then was made permanent then not long ago. So delighted.
What is the oldest member of the original setup?
Well, this is a funny one. There was an interview on Nationwide recently where the lads were referred to as young lads. And one of them, I won't mention who, replied in an email to us going young. But the oldest would have just hit the opposite side of 40.
And the youngest?
Would actually be Donal, who is 26, soon to be 27.
Cocky little shits, in a sense.
To be honest, they've lived their years. Donal even, I mean, when I first met him, he was the guy that was sort of training me in. And he used to refer, so the first day that I actually started with the company before I moved to New York, I spent the day walking around with Donal, hitting accounts and learning about the brand and you know, how to approach people. And Donal kept referring to me as the young lad moving off to New York. And the next morning he goes, by the way, what age are you? And I'm like, I was 31 at the time, I think, or 30. And I was 8 years older than him. And he was like, oh man, I'm really sorry, but old head, young shoulders, like, you know.
Okay, so now to the horticulture bit. There is the backstory, and I guess the question is, number one, the product is?
So, yeah, we produce a gin, which we started to produce last summer. And the idea behind it is that every season we release a wild botanical gin. So we'll have a spring, an autumn, summer, and a winter gin. And the idea behind it is that we use wild botanicals from the Wicklow Mountains. So the likes of gorse, water mint, primrose, woodruff, heather, pine needles, pine shoots. And we'll pick it on a Friday, and then we will distill the very next day, maybe on the Saturday or sometimes even the same day. And the idea behind it is that every season the flavor of the gin will change with the botanicals that we use, and then every year the particular batch will differ from that year before. So with the likes of the summer and the autumn, we may use Frockens in both seasons, but the Frockens in the autumn will be a different flavour to those in the summer because they'll be more ripe. And again, the next year, it all depends on the weather we get, how the botanicals will grow and how they'll flavour then the gin.
Okay, break this down, Bobby Brown, like I'm a two-year-old, and that's such old lingo, but like I'm a two-year-old, and tell me what essentially is gin. So I know if my mother gave me a glass of orange juice in 1981, it wasn't orange juice, it was some kind of thing, do dilute, and you put a 10 parts of, so it looked kind of mildly orange, and it's that stuff that they drink when they're playing Wimbledon. In your case, a gin is a clear liquid to everybody else's eye, and it's made of what?
Well, gin, there's base ingredients, which we obviously don't pick in Wicklow. So you have the likes of juniper, coriander, angelica root, and orris root. And we do use the base botanicals in order to create that flavour and sort of familiar nose to a gin. But then we take it and make it different. If you look at other gins that are out there, there are new premium gins, which is where we would probably lie. It's more so that it's so much effort and elbow grease actually goes into the making of it. It can take us days just to produce one batch because we physically go into the distillery, fill the bottles by hand, label them by hand, write on each label the batch, the day of foraging, the day of distilling. We then hand cork it and then hand wax it, hand box it, and then hand seal that box.
Wow, elbow grease is not a real ingredient, people, just in case you're wondering. It's not a real ingredient, it's Irish lingo, just in case you're in Germany and you're married to my brother-in-law. Only joking, that's actually a true story. He's obviously not here. I have. Okay, so in short, we've now got a little bit of botanical stuff in the Garden Radio Show. Let's go backtrack slightly. I walk up to the Wicklow Mountains and I decide I want to make my own gin. That's kind of not, you know, I pick a whole load of heather and I put it into a bowl and mix it around. You'll only end up a potpourri, folks. You'll only end up a potpourri. It doesn't work that way. Yours is slightly different. Do you cut by machine? Do you pick all of that by hand as well?
No, so we pick the botanicals by hand and then we go into our distillery and we place the botanicals in with the distillate into the pot part of the still. So we use a hybrid pot column still. And then through the process, we basically heat, well, we sometimes leave the botanicals to rest overnight so that they can actually mix with the liquid. And then when we come in then the next day, we'll start to actually use the still. So we'll first of all, we'll turn up the heat and we'll start to basically boil. And then as the steam and the vapors evaporate up into the still, that's the alcohol. The first part we call the heads, and that we put into one certain area. And we literally have to stand there and touch off the drip to taste the flavor. And then at certain points, you just get this key point where you're like, wow, that tastes great. And you just turn the lever, and that becomes the hearts. And what happens then is the hearts goes into a different section. And then later on, then you watch a few dials and you make sure like you are where you want to be, and then you'll taste it again and it will start to taste not so good. And we call that part the tails. And then you'll basically turn the lever once more, and then that goes into another compartment. So you're left with your heads, your hearts and your tails. And the hearts then is the part that actually gets bottled.
Holy good Magoli, and you just thought it was just a bottle of gin on its own. I get the process of how it's kind of made in my head. I get the part on the ingredients that you pick, but the how bit I'm kind of baffled on, because I have a picture of Heidi calling in the goats and Peter was his name as well, and it's a little bit that, and I know it's kind of, that makes it kind of sound fairy tale, but I understand you're not commercial operation and you're a high-end end product, but there's also the picking by hand bit, which I admire and I applaud, and it's a lovely picture. Is it that fairy tale? Is it Heidi calling in the goats, or is it just four guys standing there going, Jesus, somebody put on the stereophonics and changed the CD, oh my god, the rain's come in, we're stuck here for the night?
Well, I don't know if she'll like me to say this, but we kind of have our own little Heidi. Geraldine Kavanagh from Wild Wicklow Foods, wildwicklowfoods.com. She does foraging trips where she'll actually bring out members of the public. They book with her and she'll bring them out. And it's amazing when you go out with her. You'll be walking down the roadside, and she'll just point at something and call it by name and go over and pick it and then rub it, tell you to rub it between your hands or even just to take a bite of it. And the flavor that comes off it is just incredible. She actually has this great theory, and I completely 100% agree with her on it. She feels, for instance, gorse flowers, so those prickly yellow things that you see growing on the side of the road and in the mountains, if you actually take those flowers and rub them in your hand and smell, you get this lovely aroma of coconut. And Geraldine's view is that all these aromas are made up of different chemicals. And people feel that they need to go to certain parts of the world to get these certain smells, when in fact all these chemicals can be found everywhere. And it's just a case of finding that particular thing that contains the right chemicals to give that right smell. So she really believes that she can find you any smell that you can get anywhere in the world can be found actually right here in Ireland. You just need to know where to look and what to look for.
Ah, yes, indeed. There are people who know what they're looking at, and then I guess that's why how we ended up talking about distilling from foraging. I told you there was a garden angle on it. The eureka moment where you said let's build a distillery, lads. That's what we should do. Let's doodle that on the back of a beer mat, and I'll jack into high end jobs, and let's take your man on for a year as well, and let's take him on part time, and it all goes according to plan. Can you backtrack to the eureka moment where it was distillery to we should hook up with Geraldine?
Unfortunately, I can't, because I was actually based in the US at the time, so I missed the kind of the birth of the gin and the first distillation of it. But even for myself coming back, and obviously we have the whiskies and the putchines, but to actually go in and then be involved in the distillation process has given me so much more of an open knowledge, and actually seeing it being done. And even the lads, you know, I walked in, and Gary, who's our one of our founders and sales and marketing director, I walked into the distillery there a few weeks ago, and he was walking out from behind his desk, and all I can see is his runners and his socks lying on the radiator. because he'd been out picking the botanicals and had gotten absolutely soaked. And I think, you know, the guys, they've left really good jobs, and it's just something that they're really following. It's a passion, and, you know, you can even see it in them that since they've moved from their corporate lives, that there's actually just smiles and having the crack, but there's also very much a business hat on to make sure, you know, taking things baby steps, identifying where things are going and making sure that you help it progress and don't let it fall to the wayside.
You mentioned Putchin. Don't laugh at this, okay? Please don't laugh at this, and this is a true story. The first time I saw Putchin, you might say, in the flesh, it was a pregnant lady sitting at a bar having a half pint of Guinness with a drop of blackcurrant in the top for no apparent reason. And Putchin was being rubbed into her spine because of you know, I've never been pregnant before, people, but that's what was being rubbed in to ease the back pain. I know people who use it for rubbing into the knees. And obviously, it's fictitious Putchin because Putchin is illegal in Ireland. True story. Your Putchin is obviously on sale. There's a difference between... Can you explain to those listening at home, number one, the base ingredient for Putchin, and number two, the difference between what you do and the difference between what might be considered not permitted under state regulations?
Yeah, it's actually quite an interesting story, and it's part of ours as well. If you see our logo, it's St. Kevin with his arms aloft holding a blackbird. And basically, it was the monks that actually were the first to ever distill alcohol. And the reason why we have Glendalough and St. Kevin is because that's where it all began. And we decided to start with the Putchin. And people often say to us, because our Putchin is actually made with 80% malted barley and 20% sugar beet. And people will often say, but should it not be made with potato? But the truth is that potatoes only arrived in Ireland in the late 1500s. And Putchin was being made 1,000 years before then. And through the ages... the whiskey arrived then in 1408, but Putchin still had a great life up until about 1661. And on Christmas Day, King Charles II put a tax and licensing on distillation within Ireland. And what happened then was that the people who would generally have made Putchin, the farmers and the average guy, couldn't afford to pay these taxes and license fees. And those that could, not them, because they were around with the likes of the Jameson and Bushmills type of whiskies, became known as Parliament whiskies. And because of this reason, it went underground and then became known as the Irish Moonshine. And then what happened was, it was illegal for 330-odd years, and then it was only then in 1989 that the Irish government released a ban on distillation of Putchin, but it had to be exported. And then in 1997, they released a ban allowing it to be distributed again within Ireland. So... big sort of difference, I suppose, is that we're a licensed distillery where it is still illegal to actually distill Putchin down the back garden. But other than that, it's more so it's just come through the ages, and it's now a recognised spirit again. And it's actually geographically locked to Ireland as regards like Champagne from the Champagne region. Putchin has to be from Ireland.
Bit like the Blah, which for those who aren't aware is a soda bread of sorts, which is only allowed in Waterford. Is that a bit like that?
It would be. It's the same as Irish whiskey. Irish whiskey has to be distilled in Ireland. It has to be aged in Ireland. And it also has to be aged for 3 years and a day. And there's these, you know, technical documents that really kind of define and help protect the heritage of such products. The likes of American bourbon can only be used, and they can only use American virgin oak, where in Ireland we can actually take their pre-used, pre-loved barrels, as we like to say, and then marry our distillate in them with their the bourbon that remains, and that's where you get so many interesting flavours. We can also use sherry casks and even Scottish barrels if we wish.
Wow, okay. Yeah, listen, wow. We've pretty much covered just about everything from potatoes to gorse flowers, and it all started because of a conversation about Glendalough whiskey. What can I say? What a marvellous, unbelievably brilliant story. If people want to find out more, you have websites and Twittery things like that.
We are, yes. We're on glendalochdistillery.com. Just to spell it for you, because sometimes it is mispronounced. It's G-L-E-N-D-A-L-O-U-G-H distillery, D-I-S-T-I-L-L-E-R-Y.com. And you can also find us on Facebook, Glendalough Distillery, Instagram, Glendalough Distillery, and on Twitter, Glendalough DIST.
Instagram, Hipster Central. You heard it here first, folks. Look, if you missed any of that, you're driving, you're walking down the beach and you're listening to this in podcast in the future, at Sideshow on Twitter or facebook.com/TheSideshow, and we'll put you in touch with the lads. In the meantime, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real, genuine honour and a pleasure.
No worries. Thank you very much, Peter.
Thanks, Peter, and thanks, Owen. Samples, Peter. You know, we need samples. So just like when it's Bosch and we want to hear what it sounds like, we need to know what it tastes like. No, actually, I'm not a whiskey drinker. Not at all. Never have been. Maybe someday in the future, but definitely not me. You sample away and your comments will be welcome, because you can't do radio and have whiskey on and not say what the product tastes like. We need to know. So, samples, Peter. Next week, maybe you can give us an indication of what it's like. I did promise whiskey all the way till 3:30, and Song of the Week is due right about now. And it's not often we've time to play some of these long songs in their fullest. And today we can. The full-length version of Whiskey in the Jar. To our listeners listening live to the transmissions of 103.2 in Dublin City, who are around the city in a car, enjoying the sound of Tin Lizzy, Whiskey in the Jar, don't drink and drive. That's probably the earliest Christmas warning you've got on that message. Do enjoy your Christmas and your music. I said the C word. I've said it twice. Okay, I won't get away with that again, will I? Christmas. 103.2 Dublin City FM. And that has been another fast, furious car references again. Sideshow until next week at 3 o'clock on the Friday. Catch us on the podcast from Tea Time Friday all over the world. Get in touch on Twitter at Sideshow. The Facebook, you can get us, we're The Sideshow, and you can get us on the email info@sideshow.com, where the last 4¾ years of podcasts are still available. 7 gigabytes of audio for download, and it's all there thanks to our partners at iTunes, Audioboo and Stitcher. Thank you to them. Thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.